Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to join us on the exchange, you can do that too. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. In this age of ever-present cameras, we may take photographs for granted, but still, really good pictures seem to leap off the page or off the computer screen at us. Such are the photographs of Dorothea Lange. She took some of the most vivid photographs of people struggling through the Great Depression, especially the one called Migrant Mother, a series of pictures of a woman with seven hungry children suffering from a failed pea harvest in California. Dorothea Lange's goddaughter, Elizabeth Partridge, put out a new book of Lange's pictures and words about her. The book is called Dorothea Lange, Her Lifetime in Photography, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. Elizabeth Partridge is the award-winning author of more than a dozen books, fiction and non, for readers young and non, and is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
After all your books and many others about Dorothea Lange, why do this one?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are a number of books about Dorothea over the years. They've just consistently, people keep finding something they want to point out about her work. This project came about because I grew up as Dorothea's goddaughter, so I was merged into the whole family. And one of my good buddies in the family was Diana Taylor, one of her Dorothea's grandchildren. And Diana, for a long time, wanted to make a film on Dorothea. And I kept saying to her, look, when you get the funding to make a film, because Diana's a filmmaker and an amazing cinematographer, I said, when you get the money together, I will do a companion volume. Well, it took her 7 years to get the funding, and then all of a sudden, it came through. And so I dropped the other projects I was working on and sat down in the chair and decided to put together this book. So it's partly my sensibility of some images of Dorothea's I wanted to show, and partly that I'm older and could look at Dorothea's life in a whole new way, look at her trajectory, and partly it was this collaboration with Diana where the two of us were together more than what either one of us could have done in terms of how we saw Dorothea.
So the film she made, is that the one that's going to air as part of the PBS American Masters series?
That's right. It'll be on PBS American Masters either very end of August or early September.
Okay, so much later in the year coming up.
Yep.
Are there pictures then in Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning that have not been seen before?
Yeah, that was one of the real pleasures for me, was I was determined to find images that people weren't familiar with. And I got a total number of photographs in the plates, which are the big photographs. I had a little bit over 100 photographs, and of those, 16 or 17 have either never been seen or rarely been seen. So that was like my treasure hunt, because I felt like, well, as long as I'm doing this book, I want to increase the number of images of Dorothea's that are available for people to take a look at that they might not have seen before.
You know, it just raises a question that I don't know why it didn't occur to me until I was finished with my question list and scratched it on there in pen, but how do you choose the pictures of Dorothea Lange?
Yeah, I know. If you stop and think about it, it's really daunting, right?
Right.
So not only did I grow up around Dorothea, but my dad is a lifelong photographer, and his mother was Imogen Cunningham, also a photographer. So my life was full of photography and has been, you know, my entire life. So I've seen that photographers don't consider their work precious. It's kind of a movable feast. And they will say, and I've heard all of those three people say at different times, the photographs that you choose when you first take you first go out on a trip and you take a bunch of photographs, the ones you choose from that trip will be very different depending on if you're looking at it right away or if you're looking at it years later. So I took the license with that and said, okay, what do I find compelling? For example, you know, history has given a perspective to Dorothea's work that even she didn't have. So that, for example, there's this great photograph that she took when she was working for the Farm Security Administration. It's a picture of a man, he's a Mexican field worker, and he's holding up his baby son to the camera. And Dorothea titled it Future Voter and His Mexican Father. So that is such a commentary on today's situation that it makes the photograph all that more interesting.
Wow. So there really was a perspective she could put on things that went way beyond just snapping something with the camera.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She was brilliant at that. She was really, you know, flying at 10,000 miles high in terms of looking at the issues that she was photographing on the ground. You know, she wanted each image she took to carry those bigger thoughts for you. So that was always what she was reaching for.
Elizabeth, I was doing a little math here. It seems like you were probably in your teens when Dorothea Lange died in 1965. How well do you remember her?
Yes, I was 14 when she died. I remember her very vividly because she was the matriarch of our family. We spent all of our holidays with the Dixon Taylor Lange family, this funny, blended, cobbled-together family. So we were with them quite a bit. What's interesting for me is right at that age, at 14, that's about the age where you start kind of putting your head up and looking at the adults around you. You know, that's, you know, up to that point, I was happy to be playing Parcheesi on the floor with the other kids while the adults did their thing. And right about that age, I was really looking up at my aunts and my uncles and Dorothea and her husband, Paul Taylor, and engaging with a more adult world. So for me, it was a huge tragedy to lose her right at that age.
We will have much more to talk about with Elizabeth Partridge about her godmother, Dorothea Lange. Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning is the book that has come out just recently. In support of the coming PBS American Masters episode on Dorothea Lange, airing, as you heard, in late 2014. Back with Elizabeth Partridge to talk more about Dorothea Lange with you on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the writer Elizabeth Partridge, who just by accident of history ended up also being the goddaughter of the world-famous photographer Dorothea Lange, who took some of the most indelible images of the Great Depression in America with black-and-white camera. She is the focus of Elizabeth Partridge's book, Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the words and the pictures and the life of Dorothea Lange. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So delving into the creation of Dorothea Lange, the person she became, clearly from early on, she was a person who preferred to see and not so much be seen, I gather.
Right. That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, she was, from a young age, as a child, she was really always interested in looking and watching. She was a highly visual person just by nature. And once she started photographing, she used something she called her cloak of invisibility, which is it's a great phrase that she used to describe how she felt she could keep people from really noticing her. She said she learned to make an expression of face so that all eyes would go off her. She credits a lot of that to when she was a child, she used to walk from her school to meet her mother at the library in Lower Manhattan where her mother worked. She'd go after school and then wait at the library for her mom to finish work, and she had to walk through the Bowery. So she said that's where she learned to make the expression of face so that all eyes would go off of her. And she used that way of being unobtrusive out in the field her whole working life.
I can imagine, though, that part of the reason for not wanting eyes on her was she did walk with a limp because of polio. That was one of the upheavals of her childhood. There was another big one you point out in the book. What was that?
The other big upheaval besides the polio, which was devastating to her, was that her father abruptly left the family. And there seems to have been some shenanigans that caused him to leave. Dorothea never spoke to anybody about it. And in fact, when she left the New York City area and moved to San Francisco in her early 20s, she dropped her family name, Nutshorn, and took her mother's maiden name, Lang. So something happened, and there was a huge loss in their financial status. They went from having a huge house, her dad had been a lawyer, to her mother, Dorothea, and her brother had to move in with her grandmother, who was a difficult, temperamental woman. So Dorothea's life changed quite dramatically. And I think both of those incidents, both the polio and her dad leaving, gave her a huge amount of compassion for people who are struck down by adversity that's completely out of their control. She had one life and then it crumbled. And so she understood, as she was out there in the field photographing Dust Bowl refugees or going through the South photographing tenant farmers, she understood that life can deal you a really bad blow and you have to find a way to cope with that. And she always, in her photography, she always said she was looking for, her way of putting it was, she said, it's hard to photograph a proud man against a background like that, meaning the camps or out in the fields. But she was always looking for that sense of integrity that people managed to hold on to.
It's interesting that her own experiences really were what colored her work later in life as a professional, because she was aware from an early age that sometimes bad things do happen to good people through no fault of their own.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's huge with her, because, you know, when she came to San Francisco, she established a very popular photography studio to take portraits of the wealthiest people in San Francisco. So she could have chosen to keep that life going, but she was compelled to do something that ended up being much, much more important.
We will get to that shortly. I do want to ask about a little more about her childhood. It sounds like she was, if not a voracious reader, at least a consumer of knowledge.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. She was a consumer of knowledge. She was just taking stuff in. You know, she was very smart, and she just loved... She loved looking. She loved looking at images in magazines. She loved looking out the windows of wherever she was. She would be looking out the window, looking at life going on in the streets below, or looking at something beautiful. Like when she was a child, she was looking at a wash line with the sheets flapping in the wind, and she turned to the person next to her and said, "To me, that's beautiful." And the woman replied, "To you, everything is beautiful." Hmm. And it startled Dorothea. She hadn't thought about, she hadn't realized that everyone else wasn't taking in the world as she was. So she realized at that point, like, oh, yeah, wow, that's interesting.
This is probably the essence of any good photographer, though, is to notice the things that the other people pass by. I mean, to her, the wash flapping on the line was beautiful. To somebody else, it was just like watching the washing machine spin in today's world.
Yeah, exactly.
How did she get her start in photography, though? Because for Dorothea Lang, coming of age when she did in the mid-1910s, this was not necessarily a career for a woman at that time.
Yes, she certainly was in a different career path. There were many women photographing. This is something people actually don't realize. It was considered kind of a genteel art you could do, but not professionally. It was only considered something you would do kind of as a hobby. And that was never her interest in it. You know, she was very interested. Because she was so visual, she was so interested in documenting the world. But, you know, her whole life, she referred to herself as a photographer using he instead of she, which is really interesting to me when I look back at it. Now, part of that is the times, because we used male-gendered words a lot more, but she would say things like, a photographer puts his camera on in the morning. You know, she always saw herself as not a male photographer, but there was no way for her to use female gendered words for her work. It's really interesting to notice that.
That is. That's, and for a person who works with words as you do, that probably stands out quite a bit.
Yeah, jumps out.
Who did Dorothea Lange learn from then? Who taught her photography? Or was it just the kind of thing where somebody put a camera in her hands and she was doing it from square one?
You know, basically she's self-taught. She found her way to a few teachers, but mostly she was just, figuring it out by the seat of her pants. She took a class from Clarence White, who was a well-known photographer at the time. This is when she's in New York. She took a class from him, but being Dorothea, she did not follow his instructions. he would tell people what he wanted them to go out and photograph and bring back, and she had to do it her own way. But he was wise enough to not be tweaked by that and just let her do her thing. So she was absorbing kind of the essence of photography from him. And then she worked in various studios with various different photographers. And that was highly instructive to her, partly as a photographer, but in the photography studio, a lot of what she was learning was how to run a business, how to please a client, those kinds of things. So she also mentions that, some photographer came to the door one day, she called him an itinerant photographer, that he was, walking around, offering to take pictures of people. And she found out he didn't have his own darkroom, so the two of them built a darkroom in the old chicken coop in her backyard in Hoboken, New Jersey. And so she learned from him. So she just picked stuff up bit by bit from various people.
Our guest is Elizabeth Partridge. We're talking about her godmother, Dorothea Lange. She's written a new book. Elizabeth has written a book about Dorothea Lange, the famous Depression-era photographer. It's called Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. If you're wondering who we're talking about, Google either Dorothea Lange or Migrant Mother, and you'll see instantly which photographs and which photographer we're talking about. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. And Elizabeth, you already established that Dorothea left New York and set up shop in San Francisco and was taking pictures of fairly wealthy clients' portraits and that sort of, which sounds like a good live musician doing studio work.
Yeah, that's an apt description. I mean, she was happy enough doing that. As she called herself at the time, she saw herself as a tradesman, that she was doing a trade, that it was, something she could do and provide an income, because she was married at that time relatively shortly after she got to San Francisco. She married Maynard Dixon, the painter, and his income was unsteady. Sometimes he could sell a painting and make quite a bit of money. He was a beautiful landscape painter of California and the Southwest. So she liked having a steady income, and she had two small boys. So that was all working for her as a trade, as she said it. However, she was learning a lot during that period. If you look at all her work over her lifetime, you see the skills she has as a portrait photographer taken out into the field. You look at Migrant Mother, it's a woman with her hand up to her face in 1936 with grubby, desperate-looking children clinging to her. You see, that's actually a beautiful portrait.
It truly is. It's hard to describe on the radio, but again, this is something I certainly urge people to take a look at out there on the internet, because it's instantly available all over the place. But now it makes sense that having spent years trying to get really good evocative looks out of people in the studio, she could certainly transfer that capability to the field. But she really was sent out in the field by the Depression, in a sense. It certainly changed lots of people's lives, and it certainly changed hers and Maynard Dixon's economically.
Right. It was, such an uncertain time. I mean, we now know the trajectory of it, but it's kind of like where we were a couple of years ago, where we were all saying, how bad is this going to get? Is this going to get better? But it was even much more desperate at the time. So they had some tough decisions to make about how to get by. I mean, her studio work got much quieter. The commissions that Maynard was getting were drying up, and first they moved to the Southwest for a few months to live there and let Maynard just paint in peace. He loved the Southwest. And Dorothea basically took care of the kids and kept a home fires burning. She did take a few very beautiful photographs. But then they came back and decided to live in their separate studios and have their children be boarded out with other families to live with. And they said they were doing it to save money, but in fact, their marriage was also dissolving. So a lot of change was happening for her during that period. And with the effects of the Depression, she had a studio on a second floor on a corner building. And one day she was standing at her studio window, and she was looking down at the street below, and she saw the men who were these homeless, jobless men. She saw a man come and get to the corner and stand there confused, not knowing which way to go. Now, these guys had been coming from, you know, heading westward. They got to San Francisco. They'd gone as far west as they could go. So they really were, they didn't know where to go. So she decided, she just said to herself, I've got to make something happen. And she grabbed her camera and she went out on the streets. And that very first day of the images that she took, one of them was a photograph of, there was a woman called the White Angel who ran a bread line. And she took a photograph of a man with a tin cup kind of leaning on this fence, and all the other men who are waiting for the handout to begin have their backs to him. And it's a very evocative, lonely feeling photograph. So she took these images, she goes back to her studio, she developed the film, she printed up that one image, and she put it on the wall. And she said to herself, I just was going to do that in 24 hours and see if I could just grab a hunk of lightning. That's where we got our title from, and that's also one of Dorothea's most famous images, one that she took out on the street the very first time she went out.
It is instantly recognizable, and it really did grab a hunk of lightning. It just got that moment captured really well. Up to this point in the book, your narrative is quiet on Dorothea's own political feelings. Was she motivated by anything other than the desire to capture that moment, to get that hunk of lightning?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Dorothea was not political in terms of a party. She believed that the unrest that was going on, there had to a solution had to be found. And she did mention later that if Maynard hadn't been so opposed, she might have considered joining the Communist Party. But she wasn't, as you probably can tell already by now, Dorothea was not a joiner. Mm-hmm. She's not the kind of person who likes to be told what to do. But she knew radical change was necessary. But basically, if you look at her lifetime, what she did is spend her life kind of defending the tenets of democracy. You know, you see this in all her work for the Farm Security Administration during the Depression. She was trying to make images that would help change politics so that the government would step in and help more than they were, you know, to change public opinion and to change literally the way people in Congress were voting for various kinds of aids. And then later, when she photographed the Japanese-American internment, she was just devastated by the what she saw as a huge suspension of civil liberties, that, you know, this is something we're supposed to, you know, that's one of our hallmarks as a country. She was absolutely appalled by that.
But it's interesting that, as you pointed out, she worked for the Farm Security Administration and other government agencies. And I don't know that counterparts necessarily exist today, but she was essentially doing work for the government that showed up some of the problems that existed within the American system.
Yeah. It's an interesting tautology there, is that she was paid by the government, but she was paid to... She was in agreement with the goals of what the program was doing, what the Farm Security Administration was doing. When she did the Japanese American internment, they asked her to photograph the internment to show how humanely it was going. Now, Dorothea was absolutely opposed to what they were doing, and so her agenda was to photograph that and show that it was not what the government said it was. which was tricky because there were certain things she wasn't allowed to photograph. She wasn't allowed to photograph the barbed wire fences, the guard towers with the armed guards in them, the very poor bathroom facilities. So a lot of things were off of her list. So she really had to work to show, you know, what she was intending to show.
How did that work from the Depression find such a wide audience?
A lot of it was done by the guy who was the head of the Farm Security Administration, Roy Stryker. From everything I've read, was just absolutely a passionate believer in what he was doing. So he was tireless in getting all, there was a number of photographers besides Dorothea who did the work, and he was tireless in getting that work out there over and over and over again. And when he felt threatened that the work might be broken up, he was very careful to get it put into two locations so that it kept together as a collection.
Much more to talk about with Elizabeth Partridge. Her godmother, Dorothea Lange, is the focus of Elizabeth's book, Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. We'll talk more about one of the most famous photographers in the 20th century when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well, back here in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Elizabeth Partridge, the award-winning author of more than a dozen books, fiction and non, for readers of all ages. She is talking now about her own family, in a sense. Her godmother was Dorothea Lange, the famous Depression-era photographer, and Elizabeth's book about Dorothea using photographs never before seen, among many others that are quite well known, is called Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange if you'd like. Maybe you've been moved by the pictures of Dorothea Lange over the years. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. I was just going back and looking at pictures like Migrant Mother and some of the other just amazing portraits of people, and it does beg the question, since Dorothea did work as a portrait photographer in a studio in San Francisco, whether there was any element of posing or staging to some of the shots she got of people out in the field.
Yep, that's a terrific question because it often comes up with her work. My dad worked with her starting at about age 17 until he was about 20, 21, and he has always adamantly said, Dorothea never posed a shot. And he, you know, had that same belief. I can actually remember the one time he asked me and my sister to hold still so he could take this photograph he was trying to take in low light. That's the only time he ever directed us. It does, the question of whether Dorothea posed photographs comes up around Migrant Mother. And there are some scholars who believe that she did pose the photograph. I think they feel it's just too darn good. I really do. And there's a couple, I would say the main reason I don't believe that it is, beside that she was so adamant about not posing, and I've heard her son Dan Dixon say the same thing. If you actually look super closely at the photograph, it's not quite in focus. The focal point is slightly behind the mother's face. Dorothea was far too skilled a photographer doing the portrait work she did to have muffed her focal point. So I don't believe she did.
All right. It just comes to mind because I ran across another picture that also had a very evocative, because one of the things that makes Migrant Mother is this worried-looking hand to the face. And there's a similar one of a different woman in a different sort of context, but it just made me think that these are the kinds of things that I could hear a studio photographer saying, can you put your hand up here or something? But sounds like she didn't.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Sure, sure. I know. Yeah, those kind of sears when you take your kid in and have them look like a little angel. She didn't actually work that way as a portrait photographer. Her whole thing as a portrait photographer was to catch the essence of someone. So she allowed them to do, pardon me, what they were comfortable doing. So, for example, there's one, I remember looking through a proof sheet where she had this young woman she was photographing who must have not wanted to be photographed as a teenager. And you see the photographs of this young woman smoking and finally putting out the cigarette. And I'm sure Dorothea was just like, I'll just wait. She's had her cigarette. Yeah.
So she was a very patient person, it sounds like. She would wait for the moment to restore to something like the natural that would exist if she hadn't been there.
That's exactly right. She was very, very patient. Now, part of that was her limp. Because she moved so slowly, because she had to sort of slightly drag forward her right leg, she couldn't take a quick grab shot. That wasn't something she was capable of. And she had a very heavy, cumbersome camera.
Tell the story, if you would, Elizabeth, about the story of the most famous of her pictures, The Migrant Mother, and how she came upon this, because it's the kind of thing that sounds like she was drawn to do.
Yeah, this is an example of both her patience and her tenacity. Dorothea had been on a trip for about a month, on a long field trip photographing, and she was on her way home. She had her camera bags packed. She just could not wait to get home. She was exhausted. And as she's going up near this little town of Napomo, a little homemade sign flashed by her on the highway, Pea Pickers Camp. And she started arguing with herself, I should turn back and take that. And then she'd say to herself, oh, haven't you taken enough, Dorothea? You've been photographing these migrants for a month. Let's go home. But without thinking, she turned around and headed back to that camp. And she drove up, and the migrant mother's tent was on the edge of this larger camp. And Dorothea walked up and spoke with her a little bit and took, I think, 6 images and packed up her camera bags and headed home. But what she learned while she was there was that the people there were completely stalled out. There'd been a freeze and a rust blight had attacked the pea crop, and there was no food, there was no work, they couldn't earn any money. And Dorothea got home, and as exhausted as she was, the next day she developed those photographs, and she rushed one over to the San Francisco News. And that photo, not the one we know now, but another of the series, was used to accompany an article about food being rushed to the migrants to ward off starvation there.
So here again, she was able to see, on one hand, she was able to portray the misery but not be so affected by it that she couldn't do her job. And on the other hand, be able to put it out there so the rest of the world can see it and act upon it.
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting balance point. My dad has talked a lot about that, that while he was working with her, going through the camps and stuff, she said, we must never give anyone a handout or give them anything to eat, anything. She was absolutely solid on that. She said that we can never meet their needs, and what we have to do is focus on getting the photographs that will cause the government to get aid to them. And so that was one of her techniques. The other technique she used is that at the end of every day, she would just forget everything she had done. She would let it all go. She said, you know, you can't hang on to that and try to get some shot you missed. You've got to start fresh every day, or you just simply are going to be overwhelmed.
You know, as I read through your narrative about the work that she and Paul Taylor did in photographing the migrant workers and documenting the miseries that they were enduring during the Depression, I was thinking that essentially they had come into the story that we know so well from John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath. And then, as you point out later, as they were working to put out a book of pictures of the migrant families, The Grapes of Wrath itself did come out in that very time period. And I was just sort of surprised. I'd never heard about this reaction to The Grapes of Wrath before, that people really maligned it in the early going.
Right. I know. Isn't that interesting? And said it wasn't true. And
communist plot and all sorts of things.
Yeah, right. And then it's like, well, here are actually some photographs of what was going on. So, yeah, it's kind of like that's that great, you know, picture's worth a thousand words. It's like, you know, the two things, the novelist and the photographer, their work could enhance one another's work.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about the notes that she left with her pictures. It wasn't like they were really particularly detailed, it sounds like, but just enough to really give you an essence of the moment.
Actually, some of her captioning was quite extensive. She was all, you know, we know her images and they have a huge emotional impact on us. But her captioning was also brilliant, like the one about the Mexican worker and his American
right.
American son. She could make a short pithy caption, or she could make a longer caption, so that in the appropriate place, that information was available if that enhanced the photograph. She believed in the power of the words to strengthen a photograph.
Were there lots of details? I mean, like where I found these people, what these people's
yes.
names are? I mean, does Migrant Mother have a name, for example?
Right. Migrant Mother does have a name. Her name was Florence Thompson, but Dorothea did not ask at the time. That was not considered an important part of the work she was doing. She did do the original captions that you can find, if you go on the Library of Congress website, just Library of Congress, Migrant Mother, and you'll find the photograph with the long captions that Dorothea put in, you know, something like mother of six children, pea crop, you know, blighted. She actually puts the information in there so that information is available, and she did that over and over and over again. So it's an interesting way the two can enhance one another, and to also think about what's more powerful, Migrant Mother or a long caption with information, and which is the appropriate time for which.
Right. Migrant Mother sure gets you right there.
You understand
instantly. Right. Let's take a call. We have Lloyd in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Elizabeth Partridge, the author of Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning.
Morning.
Hi.
I'm familiar with her work. I like it. I looked at it for decades. I'm curious what kind of cameras she used. Did she shoot entirely black and white? Did she ever venture into color, et cetera? Did she use maybe some view cameras, or they were all 35 millimeter?
Oh, that's a great question, and I'm not the best person to ask, but I'll give you a little bit of information. She only used 35 millimeter at the very end of her life. She liked a much bigger format. So she used what they call 2¼, 2¼, so that the negative was actually 2¼ inches by 2¼ inches, or even larger. These were these old cameras that you would hold the one of them is the Graflex. You would hold it in front of your body, kind of at waist level, and look down into it. And so it gave what it did when you use such a big camera like that is when you have a larger negative. You can actually print just a piece of that negative and still have really great quality. So she might choose like a face out of a whole field of, like she might have six faces in an image, and she'll choose one face to pull out of that and make a print of that. As far as the color goes, towards the end of her life, she shot a few rolls of color, but she did not really like it. She wasn't drawn to it. It just didn't click for her.
There is a picture of her online that I'm looking at where the camera she's handling has a bellows, and it's about a foot long. So she definitely liked the bigger, clunkier stuff, but obviously got some great results out of those. Thanks for the question, Lloyd. Appreciate that. We talked already about how Dorothea would work herself to the point of exhaustion. It sounds like this was a regular thing for her, and she did have a period in life when she had some significant health problems that pretty much sidelined her from photography for quite some time. Were those in part because of her relentless way of working herself?
Yeah, I think so. You know, she's again, like many things with Dorothea, it's a really interesting, complex picture. She had huge health problems. Now we know she probably had post-polio syndrome, you know, that wasn't recognized at the time. So that she was, you know, as her expression of it was, I've been exhausted from the day I was born. Mm-hmm. But probably it started with the polio, her exhaustion, and it probably got worse and worse as she got older. She also had terrible ulcers, which there was a piece of that was came from worry. Photographing the Japanese-American internment, which she was so in disagreement with, had a huge impact on her health negatively. But she went from that to a period of 7 years where she could not pick up a camera, where there were surgeries and hospitalizations. And, you know, she really struggled with her body. Her way of putting it at the end of her life was, I've always had tremendous reserves for one who is not physically strong. And I honestly think it was just her will. She had the most amazing will. And she was just determined to push herself to the absolute limit of what she was capable of.
You know, when I think about the things that she missed by dying in 1965, she missed some of the reparations and some of the other apologies and things that were given to Japanese Americans for their treatment, which she abhorred so much during the Second World War and photographed so well.
Yep. Yeah, I know. She was only 70 when she died. And now, you know, we consider that still a very vital age. And, you know, tragically, of course, with the medicines we have available now, a lot of her health problems could have been averted. So, you know, I tend to also think just in terms of her work as an artist, what we all lost, you know, what could she have done from 70 to 85? It could have been just really spectacular. But this was not meant to be. So.
Did she live long enough to see some of the major retrospectives like the MoMA show?
What happened for her is that she lived long enough to put a show together. She did not actually live to see the show open. She drove her last bits of energy to put together the show. She was asked by the curator, John Sarkowski. She was the very first woman to have a quote-unquote one-man show, the first woman photographer, and it was a wonderful chance for her to go over her entire life's work, looking at the work that she had done for her entire life and putting it in a sort of sense of perspective for her and looking back. So it was wonderful she managed to do that. But she died a couple months before the show opened.
Well, we do get a great sense of perspective, though, about Dorothea Lange's work and her life from the book, Dorothea Lange, Grab a Hunk of Lightning, written by her goddaughter, Elizabeth Partridge, who's been our guest on The Exchange today. Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange, since it is New Year's Day, we will be pre-recorded and giving you some of the elements from our best previous shows. And then we'll be live again on Thursday. So from all of us at Jefferson Exchange, our producer Charlotte Duren, student assistant Reed Newland, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Happy New Year and have a great day.